Soul Theatre Company and Ross Montessori present Things That Go Bump in the Night, featuring the stories from Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark, collected by Alvin Schwartz, and The Raven by Edgar Allan Poe, original music by Kyle Jones, and starring Sarah Cray, Genevieve Vickers, Charlie Cox, and Skylar Berger. Directed and produced by Jennifer Hughes. The Raven, Part 1.
Once upon a midnight dreary, while I pondered weak and weary over many a quaint and curious volume of forgotten lore, while I nodded, nearly napping, suddenly there came a tapping, as of someone gently rapping at my chamber door. "'Tis some visitor," I muttered, tapping at my chamber door. "Only this, and nothing more." Ah, distinctly I remember, it was in the bleak December, and each separate dying ember wrought its ghost upon the floor. Eagerly I wished the morrow, vainly I had sought to borrow from my books surcease of sorrow. Sorrow for the lost Lenore, for the rare and radiant maiden whom the angels named Lenore, nameless here forevermore. And the silken, sad, uncertain rustling of each purple curtain thrilled me, filled me with fantastic terrors never felt before, so that now, to still the beating of my heart, I stood repeating, "'Tis some visitor entreating entrance at my chamber door, some late visitor entreating entrance at my chamber door. Thus it is, and nothing more." Presently my soul grew stronger, hesitating then no longer. "Sir," said I, "or madam, truly your forgiveness I implore, but the fact is I was napping, and so gently you came rapping, and so faintly you came tapping, tapping at my chamber door, that I scarce was sure I heard you." Here I opened wide the door. Darkness there, and nothing more.
Me Tai Do Ti Walker.
There was a haunted house where every night a bloody head fell down the chimney. At least, that's what people said. So nobody would stay there overnight. Then a rich man offered $50,000 to whoever would do it. A young boy said he would try it if he could have his dog with him. So, it was all settled. The very next night, the boy went to the house with his dog. To make things more cheerful, he started a fire in the fireplace. Then, he sat in front of the fire and waited, and his dog waited with him. For a while, nothing happened. But a little after midnight, he heard someone singing softly and sadly off in the woods. The singing sounded something like this.
Me Tai Do Ti Walker.
"It's just somebody singing," the boy told himself. But he was frightened. Then his dog answered the song. Softly and sadly, it sang.
"Linchy, kinchy, collie, molly, dingo, dingo."
The boy could not believe his ears. His dog had never uttered a word before. Then, a few minutes later, he heard the singing again. Now, it was closer and louder, but the words were the same.
Me Tai Do Ti Walker.
This time, the boy tried to stop his dog from answering. He was afraid that whoever was singing would hear it and come after them. But his dog paid no attention, and again it sang.
Linchy, kinchy, collie, molly, dingo, dingo.
A half hour later, the boy heard the singing again. Now it was in the backyard, and the song was the same.
Meet I Dainty Walker.
Again, the boy tried to keep his dog quiet, but the dog sang out louder than ever.
Linchy, kinchy, collie, molly, dingo, dingo.
Soon, the boy heard the singing again. Now it was coming down the chimney.
Meet I Dainty Walker.
The dog sang right back.
Linchy, kinchy, collie, molly, dingo, dingo.
Suddenly, a bloody head fell out of the chimney. It missed the fire and landed right next to the dog. The dog took one look and fell over, dead from fright. The head turned and stared at the boy. Slowly, it opened its mouth and...
There was an old woman of skin and bone who lived near the graveyard alone. She thought she'd go to the church one day to hear the parson preach and pray. She turned and looked around. She saw a corpse upon the ground. From its nose down to its chin, the worms crawled out and the worms crawled in. The woman to the preacher said, "Shall I look like that when I am dead?" The preacher to the woman said, "You look like that now that you're dead."
The Big Toe.
A boy was digging at the edge of the garden when he saw a big toe.
What for? What is that? Holy cow, that's gigantic. Why, it looks like a toe.
He tried to pick it up, but it was stuck to something. So he gave it a good hard jerk. And it came off in his hand.
That's disgusting.
Then he heard something groan and scamper away. The boy took the toe into the kitchen and showed it to his mother.
Mum, look what I found at the edge of the garden.
Why, it's a toe.
Should we call the police?
It looks nice and plump. I'll put it in the soup and we'll have it for supper.
I... What?
It shouldn't go to waste.
That's not right.
Oh, Tish Tosh, don't be silly. Go wash up for supper.
That night, at dinner.
Here, let me cut that up so we can both have a nice big piece.
Great! Thanks for the delicious, stew.
The boy reluctantly ate his supper and with a stomach full of tow, went to bed. The night was dark and quiet, so he fell asleep almost at once. But in the middle of the night, a sound awakened him. It was something out in the street, a voice, and it was calling to him.
Where is my toe?
What was that?
The boy was terrified, but he thought,
it doesn't know where I am. It'll never find me.
But he heard the voice once more, only now it was closer.
Where is my toe?
The boy pulled the blankets over his head and closed his eyes.
I'll go to sleep. When I wake up, it'll be gone.
But soon he heard the back door open, and again he heard the voice.
Where is my toe?
Then the boy heard footsteps move through the kitchen and into the dining room, into the living room, into the front hall. Then slowly they climbed the stairs. Closer and closer they came. Soon they were in the upstairs hall. Now they're outside his mother's door. He could hear the door being pushed open.
What do you want?
Where is my toe?
I don't have your toe.
Then I'll take one of yours. That doesn't fit. Where's my toe?
Shaking with fear, the boy heard the footsteps move down the hall and towards his room. Then, the door slowly creaked open. He listened as the footsteps slowly moved through the dark toward his bed. Then, they stopped.
Where is my toe?
I don't have your toe!
I know you have my toe. I can smell it. Where's my toe?
I ate it.
Then there's only one thing to do.
No.
The Raven, Part 2.
Deep into the darkness peering, long I stood there, wondering, fearing, doubting, dreaming dreams no mortal ever dared to dream before. But the silence was unbroken, and the stillness gave no token, and the only word there spoken was the whispered word, Lenore. This I whispered, and an echo murmured back the word, Lenore. Merely this, and nothing more. Back into the chamber churning, all my soul within me burning. Soon again I heard a tapping somewhat louder than before. Surely, said I, surely that is something at my window lattice. Let me see then what thereat is, and this mystery explore. Let my heart be still a moment, and this mystery explore. 'Tis the wind, and nothing more. Open here I flung the shutter, when, with many a flirt and flutter, in there stepped a stately raven of the saintly days of yore. Not the least obeisance made he, not a minute stopped or stayed he, but, with mien of lord or lady, perched above my chamber door. Perched upon a bust of Pallas just above my chamber door. Perched and sat, and nothing more. Then, this ebony bird beguiling my sad fancy into smiling by the grave and stern decorum of the countenance it wore.
Though thy crest be shorn and shaven, thou, I said, art sure no craven, ghastly grim and ancient raven wandering from the nightly shore. Tell me what thy lordly name is on the night's plutonium shore. Quoth the raven, nevermore.
The White Wolf.
Once a grandmother was sitting by the fire with her grandchildren. They were begging her to tell a story, but they got more than they bargained for. Tell us a story, Grammy, but a true one, not the one about the fairies. All right, sit, and listen closely. I was a little girl, and the timber wolves around French Creek had gotten out of hand. They kept catching our cattle and gobbling them up. There were so many wolves, the farmers could not stop them from killing their cattle and sheep. So the state put a bounty on them. It would pay a hunter $10 for every wolf pelt he turned in. A butcher in town named Bill Williams thought that that was pretty good money. He stopped working as a butcher and started killing wolves. He was good at it. Every year he killed over 500 of them. That came to more than $5,000. It was quite a bit of money in those days. After 4 or 5 years, Bill had killed so many wolves, there were hardly any left in that area. So he retired, and he vowed never to harm another wolf, because wolves had made him rich. Then one day, a farmer reported that a white wolf had killed 2 of his sheep. He had shot at it and hit it. But the bullets didn't have any effect. Soon, the wolf was seen all over the countryside, killing and running, but nobody could stop it. One night, it came into Bill's yard and killed his pet cow. Bill forgot about his decision never to harm another wolf. He went into town the next morning and bought a young lamb for bait. He took it out into the hills and tied it to a tree. Then he backed off about 50 yards and sat down under another tree with his gun in his lap. He waited. When Bill didn't come back, his friends started looking for him. Finally, they found the lamb. It was still tied to a tree. He was hungry, but it was alive. Then they found Bill. He was still sitting against the other tree. But he was dead. His throat had been torn open. But there was no sign of a struggle. His gun hadn't been fired, and there were no tracks in the soil around him. As for the white wolf, it was never seen again. And that, my children, is why we do not go in the forest.
But Granny, it's so cool!
Yeah, Grandma!
No! Bill Williams was my father, and what happened to him will not happen to you.
Legend has it that the wolf still haunts those woods.
Now go to bed.
Fine, Grandma. Late that very night. Just like her father, there was no sign of a struggle. But Grandma was dead, and upon her lap sat the head of a lamb.
There was a man who lived in Leeds. He filled his garden full of seeds. Seeds began to grow. It was like a garden filled with snow. But when the snow began to melt, it was like a ship without a belt. And when the ship began to sail, it was like a bird without a tail. And when the bird began to fly, it was like a dragon in the sky. When the sky began to roar, it was like a lion at my door. And when the door began to crack, it was like a knife in my back. And when my back began to bleed, I was dead, 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 dead indeed.
The Girl Who Stood on the Grave.
Close your eyes and I'll kiss you.
It was late autumn and time for the harvest dance at Windsor Middle School. There were streamers and balloons to hang, and everyone was laughing and listening to music.
Rebecca, can you grab that bag of twinkle lights?
Sure.
Look out, though. Don't walk under that ladder.
What? Why not?
It's bad luck.
Oh, that's just a superstition. Don't be stupid.
I'm not stupid. Why would you mess with bad juju?
You're being silly. Watch out for black cats crossing your path.
Step on a crack.
Break your mother's back.
And don't ever stand on a grave after dark.
I've never heard that one.
That one gives me the creeps.
The person inside will grab you. He'll pull you under.
Oh, honestly.
All right, Miss Skeptical. I'll give you $1 if you stand on a grave.
$1? That's not even worth the walk.
All right, $5.
Mm-mm.
$10?
Deal. Wait, aren't you guys coming with me?
Oh, no. It's not scary if you're with a group. You have to go alone.
How will you know I even did it then?
Here, stick this knife in one of the graves. Then we'll know you were there.
The graveyard was filled with shadows and was as quiet as death.
This is silly. There is nothing to be scared of,
the girl told herself, but she was scared anyway. She walked down the row of graves, a chill reaching into her bones. She picked out a grave and stood in front of it, summoning her courage, which seemed to have left her. Slowly, she stepped onto the mound of grass, trying not to think what was a mere 6 feet beneath her. Then quickly she bent over and plunged the knife into the soil. It was silent, quiet as a tomb. She could hear the wind lightly blowing in the trees, and an owl hooted in the distance.
Okay, that's long enough. Silly superstition.
She started to leave, but she couldn't get away. Something was holding her back. She tried a second time to leave, but she couldn't move. She was filled with terror.
Something has got me! Oh my gosh, they were right! It's true!
She screamed and fell to the ground.
Please! Someone! Anyone!
When she didn't come
she
back,
never came
the
back.
Others went to
I don't know
for
where she
her.
Could be.
She? Have you seen her? They found her body sprawled across the grave.
Rebecca!
Without realizing it, she had plunged the knife through her skirt, and she had pinned it to the ground. It was only the knife that held her. She had simply died of fright.
The Raven, Part 3.
Much I marveled, this ungainly fowl, to hear discourse so plainly, though his answer little meaning, little relevance he bore. For we cannot help agreeing that no living human being ever yet was blessed with seeing bird above his chamber door. Bird or beast upon the sculptured bust above his chamber door, with such a name as Nevermore. But the raven, sitting lonely on the placid bust, spoke only that one word, as if his soul in that one word he did outpour. Nothing farther then he uttered, not a feather then he fluttered, till I scarcely more than muttered, "Other friends have flown before. On the morrow he will leave me, as my hopes have flown before." Then the bird said, "Nevermore." Startled at the stillness broken, by reply so aptly spoken, "Doubtless," said I, "what it utters is its only stock and store, caught from some unhappy master whom unmerciful disaster followed fast and followed faster, till his songs one burden bore, till the dirges of his hope that melancholy burden bore, of never, nevermore.
But the raven, still beguiling all my fancy into smiling, straight I wheeled a cushioned seat in front of bird and bust and door. Then, upon the velvet sinking, I betook myself to linking fancy into fancy, thinking what this ominous bird of yore, what this grim, ungainly, ghastly, gaunt, and ominous bird of yore meant in croaking, nevermore. This I sat engaged in guessing, but no syllable expressing to this fowl whose fiery eyes now burned into my bosom's core. This and more I sat divining, with my head at ease reclining on the cushion's velvet lining that the lamplight gloated o'er. But whose velvet violet lining with the lamplight gloated o'er? She shall press, ah, nevermore.
The Hook.
It was a clear and starry autumn evening, and Donna and Sarah had just gotten out of the movies. They decided to drive up the hill on the edge of town to look at the stars and the lights below. The crickets chirped as they sat gazing out the window, talking.
Do you want to listen to some music?
Sure.
She turned on the radio and listened as a song ended. Before another one could start, an announcer broke in with a news bulletin.
This is a special bulletin from BBC News. There has been a prison break at the Bedford Prison. Convicted murderer Colin Hacklow has escaped and is headed south on foot. Hacklow should be considered armed and dangerous. He was last seen wearing an orange jumpsuit and his left hand is missing. In its place, Hacklow is a prosthetic that he has fashioned into a hook.
Let's roll up the windows and lock the doors.
Are you serious? That prison is miles from here.
That prison isn't that far away. Maybe we should go home.
But it's such a beautiful night. I'm not ready to go home. Look, it's only 10 o'clock.
I don't care what time it is. I want to go home.
Look, Sarah, he's not going to climb all the way up here. Why would he do that? Even if he did, all the doors are locked. How could he get in?
Donna, he could take that hook and break through a window and open a door. I'm scared. I want to go home.
Fine!
Donna reluctantly started the car. As she did, Sarah thought she heard someone or something scratching at her door.
Did you hear that? It sounded like someone was trying to get in.
Not funny. Now you're just trying to scare me.
I'm not kidding. I heard something.
Soon they got to Sarah's house.
Sorry about cutting the evening short. Would you like to come in and have some cocoa?
No, I've got to get home.
Sarah climbed out of the car and turned to shut the door behind her. As she did, she screamed.
Oh!
Donna jumped out of the driver's seat and ran around her, asking what was
wrong. What's wrong, Sarah?
Sarah could only point. Hanging from the outer door handle was a hook.
Room for one more.
A man named Joseph Blackwell came to Philadelphia on a business trip. He stayed with friends in the big house they owned outside the city. That night they had a good time visiting, but when Blackwell went to bed, he tossed and turned and couldn't sleep. Sometime during the night, he heard a car turn into the driveway. He went to his window to see who was arriving at such a late hour. In the moonlight, he saw a long black hearse filled with people. The driver of the hearse looked up at him. When Blackwell saw his queer, hideous face, he shuddered. The driver called to him, "There's room for one more." Then he waited a minute or two, and he drove off. In the morning, Blackwell told his friends what had happened. "You were dreaming," they said. "I must have been," he said, "but it didn't seem quite like a dream." After breakfast, he went into Philadelphia. He spent the day high above the city in one of the new office buildings there. Late in the afternoon, he was waiting for the elevator to take him back down to the street. But when it arrived, it was very crowded. One of the passengers looked out and called to him. "There's room for one more," he said. It was the driver of the hearse. "No thanks," said Blackwell. "I'll get the next one." The doors closed and the elevator started down. They were shrieking and screaming, and then a sound of a crash. The elevator had fallen to the bottom of the shaft. Everyone aboard was killed.
The Raven, Part 4.
Then methought the air grew denser, perfumed from an unseen censer, swung by seraphim whose footfalls tinkled on the tufted floor. Wretch, I cried, thy God hath lent thee, by the angels he hath sent thee, respite, respite, and repent thee from thy memories of Lenore. Quaff, oh quaff, this kind nepenthe, and forget this lost Lenore. Quoth the raven, nevermore. Prophet, said I, thing of evil, prophet still, if bird or devil, whether tempter sent or whether tempest tossed thee here ashore, desolate yet all undaunted, on this desert land enchanted, on this home by horror haunted, tell me truly, I implore, is there balm in Gilead? Tell me, I implore. Quoth the raven, nevermore. Prophet, said I, thing of evil, prophet still, if bird or devil, by the heaven that bends above us, by the God we both adore, tell this soul with sorrow laden, if, within the distance Aiden, it shall clasp a sainted maiden whom the angels named Lenore. Clasp a rare and radiant maiden whom the angels named Lenore. Quoth the raven, nevermore. Be that word our sign of parting, burned or fiend, I shrieked, upstarting. Get thee back into the tempest and the night's plutonium shore. Leave no black tomb as a token of the lie the soul hath spoken. Leave my loneliness unbroken. Quit the bust above my door. Take thy beak from out my heart and take thy form from off my door. Quoth the raven, nevermore. And the raven, never flitting, still is sitting, on the pallid bust of Pallas just above my chamber door. And his eyes have all the seeming of a demon's that is dreaming, and the lamplight o'er him is streaming throws his shadow on the floor. And my soul from out that shadow that lies floating on the floor shall be lifted nevermore.
Crawl all over your dirty snout.
chest caves in, your eyes pop out, and your brain turns to sauerkraut. They invite their friends and their friends too. They all come down to chew on you, and this is what it is to die. I hope you had a nice goodbye. Do you ever think, as a hearse goes by, that you may be the next to die? And your eyes fall out, and your teeth decay, and